This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. With 50 years of land and habitat management experience, the Cincinnati Nature Center is now establishing the Center for Conservation and Stewardship. The center will promote research, develop education programs, increase conservation efforts, and protect green space in our region. Dr. Corey Christopher, Director of Conservation and Stewardship at the Cincinnati Nature Center, joins us to discuss efforts to study and preserve the environment and our native ecosystems. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Corey, thank you for being here this afternoon. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
I got to ask you something about yourself personally. How did you get started as an ecologist?
So I grew up sort of not in the middle of nowhere, but sort of nowhere adjacent, I guess. So I was in the woods all the time.
You were in nature.
Okay. I was in nature. We grew up, I was just in the foothills of the Appalachians in North Georgia. So from the moment I could walk, I was outside running around in the woods. So I've never known anything else.
Did you have a particular plant or animal that influenced you when you were a kid?
Yes, I did. So trillium, it's a wildflower. We have nodding trilliums back home, and their flowers, instead of pointing straight up like the trilliums here do, they sort of nod at the ground. And as a kid, I thought they were just really it's really unusual, and it got me started reading about ecology and reading about plant ecology, and it turned me on to sort of the intellectual part of my job.
So at an early age, you said, "I want to do this. I want to be an ecologist."
At a very early age, I realized that I was interested. It was the only thing that could keep my attention for longer than just a few minutes. I was one of those kids that was always on the move, and being in the woods and looking at, you know, salamanders in a stream or wildflowers, it was the only thing that could keep my attention.
So how do you feel about this new role as director of the Conservation and Stewardship Center?
It's kind of a dream come true in a lot of ways. I actually did my graduate research at the Nature Center. And at the time, I thought, you know, I was doing an ecology study there and was really interested in more sort of applied research, and never dreamed that I would actually be at that very spot again, leading this regional approach to conservation. So, I mean, I'm absolutely thrilled. It's an honor to be there, and I love every day. I never know what I'm going to do on any particular day, but I love it.
For those who might not know about the Cincinnati Nature Center, can you give us a little background about it?
Yeah, so Cincinnati Nature Center started in 1967, was when the doors opened. Stanley Rowe was our founder. He, along with some others, Helen Black included, decided they wanted a nature center, and they were able to acquire some property in Claremont County. It was the former Krippendorf estate. And they opened the doors to the public in 1967. Next year, we celebrate our 50th anniversary. And it was a way the founders were very interested in having children getting into nature and making sure that regardless of where you live, there was a parcel of land in this region where you could really sort of, quote, go back to nature and get away from the city. It's only minutes from the city, but you can really get away. And when you're in the middle of the nature center, you have no clue that Cincinnati's just right outside the borders, basically.
Now we have the Center for Conservation and Stewardship that's being started by the Cincinnati Nature Center. What do you think is going to be the impact of this center?
Well, I hope if I do my job right. You just heard a minute ago how the folks from Imago and Enright were looking for partners in what they're doing. What I think is so interesting about this region is that we have so many conservation organizations, so many sort of like-minded organizations, and oftentimes it's hard for them to make those initial partnerships, to form those collaborations, because everybody's just doing the best we can to do the wonderful jobs we're doing, that sometimes it takes more of a coordinating body to pull people together, to make sure we're all on the same page, to make sure everybody knows where the resources are, to share ideas, to share those resources. And so I think the impact is going to be facilitating collaborations across the Cincinnati tri-state region that otherwise may not have happened simply because there was nobody there sort of looking out for those partners, putting people together and facilitating that interaction. I mean, in addition, we do research on a very applied from a very applied perspective at the Nature Center, things with invasive species or just habitat preservation projects. So we're collecting data. We have relationships with University of Cincinnati, and we're forming new relationships with Northern Kentucky. And I think what's really exciting is that we will be able to host these academic research institutions, help them gather these data, and then help them basically give them a venue for sharing those data with other organizations that need it.
So tell me about the facilities themselves for the center. The place where this is going to be located has quite a bit of history, doesn't it?
It does. It's the former estate of Grace Grosbeck. So back in the 1920s, they built this home, and they were sort of like mind, I would say, to the people who eventually founded the Nature Center. They were gardeners. They had a greenhouse. It was this beautiful estate with a jekyll landscape, rose garden. It was a famous landscape architect, and there was a Marie Zimmerman have these wonderful sort of cast iron sculptures on the inside of the house, everything from the doorknobs to the sconces on the wall. So it was this sort of art meets nature feel to it. And it's this now on the historic registry. So it's going to be a wonderful venue, both in terms of having wet lab space. So it's sort of a dream for me to have space to actually go, and you can get things dirty and do the research that you need to do. And then you walk into this, you know, beautiful estate with some areas in the back, a huge deck, a beautiful patio for events, and then office space upstairs. So it's a beautiful place in the middle of a beautiful landscape. And so I think it's going to be useful both for research and for people who want, you know, to a wedding, for example, I think would be wonderful out there.
Oh, well, this sounds like it's a great fit for the center. So
it is a perfect fit.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join the conversation, let's talk to John in Oxford. Hi, John.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, thank you.
I've got 50 acres, and I was looking forward to maybe retiring on this property. 50 years ago, it didn't have all the honeysuckle, autumn olive, multiflora rose, tree of heaven. It had a lot of ash trees, which it no longer has. I've talked to foresters, I've talked to park rangers, and it seems to me like nobody's got a plan for how to deal with this. So I'm kind of concluding that I either need to learn to love honeysuckle or I'm not sure what. We've got some isolated plants. The Ohio Department of Forestry encourages tree farm owners to eradicate honeysuckle on 5 acres of land, but that's a small percentage of the total, and with all the seeds that the honeysuckle produces, you can't get ahead of it.
Yeah, it's easier said than done, Yeah. Is the center going to do any research on invasive species and that kind of thing?
So, indeed, that was actually my own research when I was in graduate school with Amur honeysuckle, of all things. I will say that we're probably, along with many of the parks in this area, we are now experts in honeysuckle removal. It is not easy. It does take some ongoing attention. But we do have strategies for eliminating honeysuckle, as well as autumn olive, bittersweet, wisteria now, lesser celandine poppy. There is a lot of invasive plants, and most of the – I mean, if you're looking for sort of applied advice, I mean, the easiest way with honeysuckle in particular is foliar spraying with glyphosate, Roundup, basically. If you do it in the autumn after everything's already gone dormant, all the native plants have gone dormant, you're going to have very little in the way of sort of the buy-kill of native plants. A lot of people don't like that, though. They don't want to use lots of chemicals, and that's completely understandable. We use them judiciously, and only because we have a lot of acres we have to hit. The other way, if you have a smaller stand, you can just cut off the honeysuckle of the ground and just spray a little of the Roundup on top of the cut. But it's aggressive, and it comes back if you don't do it right the first time.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's too easy to deal with. Yeah.
It's not easy. If you do it right for the first couple of years, the only problem after that is the birds will bring the seeds back in.
Yeah. So what other kinds of research will you be doing at the center?
So we have, in addition to the invasive plant research, a lot of what we are hoping to do is going to be very applied. So things like pollinator research. So in particular, monarchs, monarch larvae, native bees, everything from, what are the populations in different types of habitats? For example, mixtures of wildflower seeds. I can see us looking at how do we go about attracting the greatest diversity of pollinators depending on what native plants you put in. But then a lot of it, one of the things I'm really interested in is how do we go about choosing native species in a way that's going to help the your average backyard suburban home with owners that want to do the right thing. They don't want to put in a bunch of exotics. But how do we go about sort of selecting those species, those native species, and then growing them at the Nature Center so that we can then sell them to the average homeowner to then put into their backyard? So it's going to be a mixture of everything from academic research about invasive plants, habitat restoration, to more applied, very practical research is in terms of like plant selection. Even something as simple, I think a lot of people don't realize when we like restore a grassland, for example, knowing how many pounds of seeds and which types of seeds to put into that particular seed mix can really sort of make or break the final product that you get. And so I think we will be able, through these partnerships, these regional partnerships, to begin sharing information with other nature preserves and really figuring out for this region what is the best sort of composition of plant species to get the best diversity of pollinators or things like that. So
it sounds like you foresee a strong educational role.
There's going to be a very strong educational role. I look at it as I'm sort of preaching to two different audiences, I guess. The first are the people who already love nature. They want to do the right thing. They want to learn a little more. So we're going to be offering some practical workshops, things like putting in rain gardens or putting in a pollinator garden, but actually in a way that allows people to do it so they can come to the Nature Center instead of sitting in a chair and listening to somebody with a PowerPoint. They're actually outside with a shovel getting dirty doing the work so that they'll know how to go back home and then do it in their own yard. But then we've got the audience of people that don't quite know that they love nature. They may like being outdoors, but they're not necessarily going to go and put in a rain garden right away. So we have other events, things like our Hoots and Hops
events.
A little bit of that persuading going on. Because honestly, if we want people to have fun, and at the end of the day, I think that having fun in nature is the best way to get people as excited about preserving it as anything. And we still have a strong focus at the Nature Center as a whole on getting children into nature early and often. But I think with the Center for Conservation and Stewardship, it's going to open the door for a lot of adult programs, more university programs, as well as high school, being able to get in and contribute to some of the research that us and some of our partners might be doing.
Will you be working with local students and universities, the researchers they have there?
We are constantly on the lookout for partners who need venues to do research, who would like to have some secure places to put some research equipment out. I would love to talk to those people and see what kind of relationships we can get going.
We've got about 30 seconds left here, Corey. Tell us a little bit about the role the center is going to take in protecting green space in our region.
So we not only are going to be helping educate people on how to protect the green space in their backyards. Most of the land in this region is owned by private homeowners in their backyards. So that educational aspect is certainly going to be one of them. But we also partner with Cardinal Land Conservancy, which is a land conservancy in this region that helps guide people who want to put their home into sort of a permanent conservation sort of easement. Basically set some legal definition around what they would like to see happen to their land so that they can be assured that the next generation that owns that home is going to maintain that land in the way that they wanted it maintained.
Well, thank you for joining me this afternoon, Corey.
Thank you.
Dr. Corey Christopher, he's Director of Conservation and Stewardship at the Cincinnati Nature Center.